She's a perfect 10, but she wears a 12. Baby, keep a little 2 for me. She could be sweet 16, busting out of the seams. Still love in the first degree. Hello and welcome to episode 15 of Say My Wombles. Say My Wombles is brought to you by some of us who helped put together Yellow and Blue back in the day. We are non-affiliated and non-partisan. Say My Wombles. Number 15 is a highly creative number. If you have this number in your new numerology chart, it means you're gifted with immense creative potential. My name is Mark Lewis. I'm off to Scotland in the morning to listen to the locals cheer on anyone but England in the World Cup. Tonight's panel features Adam Proctor, Niall Cooper, and a warm welcome back to Alex Froakes. On tonight's show, out for the count of 10, we review our unbeaten run. We're doing a little impromptu mid-season, almost mid-season review, and a little review also of the events at the club coming into the Christmas break. Welcome to episode 15 of the Same Old Wombles. Watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
See, Matt isn't here, so he can't praise your intro.
Doesn't have to be Matt. You're all allowed to say nice things, you know.
No, but I'm not now because, you know, I've spent years explaining how creativity is imbued in everyone and it's something you can learn and something you can, work on through techniques, etc. And you have now destroyed all of that by saying it has something to do with the number 15 and is magic. So never mind, everyone. Creativity is magic and you can't all have it.
It's amazing what you can do when you only have 5 minutes to prepare, you know. So
I have to say also, Mark, that you did obviously quote a fantastic, beautiful South song that is one of the few songs that is banned in this house that I live in because of certain other people in my house hating Beautiful South, whereas it is one of my guilty pleasures. So, Mark,
what is wrong with them? Maybe you and I should go and see Paul Heaton. He's playing in a couple of weeks' time.
I'd happily go see Paul Heaton. I believe this is, however, not the Paul Heaton podcast. It's not called Same Old Beautiful South.
It's the Same Old Wombles.
Right.
Mr. Alex Froakes, how are you, sir?
I'm surviving nicely, thank you very much. Yeah, even though it's done nothing but rain for the last I don't know how long, but yeah, that's all right. I think I managed to miss the cup game, so I think that was a win all round, really.
You're not wrong there. Actually, the most creative thing I was managing to do was try and make some sensible comments on our group WhatsApp about what was actually going on during the game. And the fact I didn't say anything for the first half an hour probably tells you everything you need to know, really.
But we had a good run, didn't we? You know, 10 games unbeaten, as long as you count the Pizza Cup defeat as a draw, which I think we do. And we proved that we're not the complete disaster that some of the naysayers would like to think we were a few weeks ago. So, you know, it's obviously hugely disappointing to go out of the cup against a non-league side. But what are they? They 16 places below us in the league pyramid. It wasn't the biggest shock in the world. You know, I think much as it's a cliche and much as the extra cash would have done us a lot of good, particularly if we got some TV revenue, I think concentrating on the league is probably a good thing for us this season.
100%, 100% overall. And the reality is, in November, we played a lot of football. A lot of football. And as a result of playing a lot of football, they just, mentally as much as physically, they just didn't have it in them, to be honest, yesterday. Because it was the first choice team we would play. You know, he hasn't bounced Pierce back into the team, which I think a lot of people are quite happy about. And actually, Towler and Callum Bye didn't have a bad game, but it's one of those games where you could not genuinely say who the man of the match should be because none of the 11 covered themselves in anything close to glory.
I mean, that's the only thing I'm a little bit concerned about, but I obviously wasn't there, but it's the same 11. So was the performance that drastically different, you know? And so why are we, if it is, why have we got this swingometer of performances? That's what I'm a little bit worried about. I mean, I know we've unbeaten for 10, That's obviously put us in a fantastic place. But we can't have random swingometer of performances. That will really not do us any favours.
That's interesting, Adam, because obviously there is the now, I think, famous palometer that Mark has espoused many a time here. And for those who don't know, I've spent the last week being ill and therefore actually missed the cup game despite having like loads of tickets and promised to do crazy run the kind of lifts backwards and forwards to make sure a whole bunch of people got in there who then cursed me massively yesterday. But, you know, those are the way things are. So I suppose for me, Mark, was the palometer in full effect yesterday? Was he off the scale, full swing, Tory wipeout, or was it back with the the trust and the Sunak in for another four?
The palometer was in massively full swing, frankly. I'll talk about Paris in a bit, but actually, if I tell you that Pell missed two chances from a combined 4 yards, the first one, both down our end, so you would have seen them had you guys all been well enough to actually be able to be at the game. The first one was closer to the goal line than the edge of the 6-yard box. And he made a 10-yard lung-busting run into the box and missed the ball completely. Beautiful cross by Chislett. Second was a beautiful cross by Hussein Bila after he'd come on a sub, which he chested down, controlled, and then with the goalkeeper on his arse, put over the bar. And both of those were 1-0. So, frankly, the palometer, it was just one of those days where, yes, the opposition were better than us and they deserved the win, 100%. But actually, they weren't that good. So they didn't need to be that good, sadly. We were just below average.
There's a saying in our family, we go again after every disappointment. And I think that's got to be it. We are out of the cup now. Okay, we've qualified for the third round 5 of the last 6 seasons, but this year we won't be there. We're still in the Pizza Cup. We're obviously not in the one round cup, but we're doing okay in the league at the moment, given that good run. So, you know, the chances are that if we can manage to keep those players fit, bring back a couple of players who've been injured and have them performing well, and get the confidence back again. And it's taken a little knock, but it shouldn't be destitute at the moment. If we are able to do all that, then it's realistic to think that we might be challenging for a playoff space by the end of the season. We've just got to get a heads up and make sure that December is as good as November was, and make sure we go into the new year on a high. I don't know what the January transfer window will bring. Hopefully it won't see Asal going. I think that would be a real problem for us. But, you know, maybe the addition of one, maybe just two players, and getting a bench that doesn't look like the academy will be a really good thing.
Yeah, I mean, do we know if the head of football is going to be in place, like in time for that January transfer window? Because I think what Alex has alluded there is the fact that experience on the bench would probably do us some favours. But of course, to be able to find those kind of players, you have to have a broader understanding potentially than JJ does of the football pyramid. So, does anyone know if that's like close to getting sorted, or is it still up in the air?
I do.
Okay. We know that you probably do.
You do, but you're not allowed to tell us, or you'd have to kill us, or what?
I'm not sure of starting date. I know that the position has been resolved. I can't say much more than that. You know, I can't. You can cross-question me all of those. All the rest of it. I mean, I think the one big thing that should be notable is that, you know, we wanted a new MD. We've got a new MD. We will have a new head of football coming in, which we wanted. We've got that in place. We've got potential new changes in how the governance structure of the Don's Trust operates, because we've moaned about that for a long time. We're going to have these new theme groups coming in place to make it much more easy and accountable for both, so people know who's responsible for what, because I don't think people do. So it'll be, you know, really obvious that if you're looking at who's responsible for things like the Hall of Fame, that'll be obvious. Who's responsible for things like, you know, ticketing, all of that will be really obvious. All of that's coming into place. We've got a new ticketing manager. There's loads of things that people wanted to happen that the Don's Trust board had been pushing for a long time, and they're all coming into fruition. Now, one thing on the back of that is that I've been speaking to a lot of the other outgoing Don's Trust board members like myself, and we're all kind of going, a bit cursing ourselves, going, whoever's next on the board, it's like all the hard shit, right, that we've taken a lot of flak for has actually all come into place. So, you know, I think it should really be a time for really pushing forward and seeing the club grow, because there's been lots of stuff that needed to be resolved that is resolved. There's probably stuff we've forgotten about or things that have slipped, but there's been a lot of hard graft, and that's all come into play. So like head of football, MD, they're brilliant. Really good news for us off the pitch. I think it will see a big bonus going forward. Mark?
That's really positive, obviously, to hear just from a straightforward football perspective. Because for me, staying on football for a minute, and then we could talk about Danny Mac for a bit as well, but staying on football, it was obvious yesterday you obviously didn't have Hudlin available, you didn't have NWC either available or match fit yet. So you had Bartley, who clearly needs lower division loans to be beaten up by some hard school of knocks centre-backs before he can be let loose on League Two. You had Fisher, who he's tried in a couple of Pizza Cup games, hasn't really got anywhere. Marsh, unfortunately, seems to be going backwards. And then even Alfie Trialist, sadly, we love him and his potential is amazing. But Alfie Trialist came on and I swear he was wearing slippers because he must have fallen over four times in 5 or 6 minutes. But the actual issue overall was that the guy he replaced, who we've discussed on many occasions, Paris, just needs a rest, frankly. Sadly, he gave the ball away after 17 seconds. And I wasn't counting, genuinely wasn't counting. Obviously, we can see the scoreboard from where we sit quite easily. But that set the tone for the whole game. And there's four or five players I've mentioned there that aren't either ready for the first team or right now need to be taken out of the first team. So actually, normally I know we don't bring in people until 11:55 p.m. on the last day of the transfer window. But if there's an opportunity to do so any earlier than that, that would be really useful, I think. Overall, I'm not sure that we necessarily expected much out in November. And that's the really encouraging thing for me. You know, in November, we played people like Orient. We played Salford away. We played Tranmere away, and obviously in between we had all the FA Cup games and the extra replays. And out of all that, you know, we won three games back to back for the first time in forever. That's really positive. And then you going into December, you've got Stevenage is going to be tough. You've got Newport away, that's going to be tough. But you've also got people like Sutton who aren't on a great one. You've got Colchester who are fighting for their lives and coming up Grimsby. So that should be positive, and that should be a way to be able to push on in the general match day surroundings and build on the positive form they've got, without necessarily having the distraction of a big alluring FA Cup tie, which we all would have loved, but we just need to get over ourselves and move on.
Yeah, I don't think we need to be too negative about it. I mean, obviously we're disappointed because you kind of think, well, as we've said on other earlier episodes, we like the FA Cup. The magic of the FA Cup still lives for us. And when you're playing a team that's a lot lower than you are, you expect to kind of continue and hope for getting one of those big clubs away somewhere, you know, in London or in Manchester or wherever. So it is disappointing. But as you say, we've been doing really well generally. I guess the other thing I was thinking in terms of like the structure for the Don, which is a Don's Trust structure thing, obviously that's got to go through the SGM next. That's right, isn't it, Noel? So it hasn't been agreed yet. So the owners, the fans, we need to agree at the next SGM that we're happy with that structure to happen. So when is that happening? Before the elections end? I can't remember.
Yeah, it happens after the election. So you get the SGM. We'll discuss all of it. And at that point, you'll then know the kind of new structure about, I mean, it's this, the big bits really is about the governance. I think having a PLC that has got NEDs on it is actually a really important move for us, because that would be about appointing people that have the skill sets that we actually need. That hasn't been the case before. And I think that's really a really essential move forward for us. And even though the PLC will have only three, under this new structure, only three out of the nine would be DTB members, we would have a super majority. So, you know, if the three DTB members get together, then they can't be outvoted. And I think that's actually a very important bit to bring through on that. So you have the extra expertise from the NEDs. It means that the minority shareholders wouldn't have kind of an overarching control. So you've kind of got that extra bit of protection. I think it's really important. And it gives, you know, we need people like legal expertise. We need people that maybe know the community really well, or like, you know, there's certain elements that have been missing. So you can't appoint an NED until you know the skill sets of the incoming board. And then once you've got that, then you can start creating something that is much more robust and replicates what you'd expect to see in like other equivalent type of organizations. And we've not had that for a long time. So these are like big, significant changes that need to happen, in my opinion. Obviously, DT members might vote against that, and, you know, so be it. But I would be a big advocate of supporting it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing that seemed to be a bit controversial was the concerns about the number of DTB board members that would then be on the PLC, because that's reducing slightly. But then, if you want to talk about that, you can. And I guess the other thing then for the NEDs, they'll be appointed. Will they be like jobs advertised based on the structure of the PLC at that point, and then decide? Then, you know, see who applies. And I'm guessing as an NED, a non-executive director, it's not a paid role. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be a paid role. I mean, that whole, how that's appointed and how that goes forward is going to be sitting with the, you know, new DTB and the existing PLC to look at how that goes forward. So, you know, everything else I say beyond that is speculation. So it'd be looking for, you know, incoming board members, for which there could well be two on this chat right now. Making those really vital decisions. So that's where it's at. But, you know.
I'll tell you where it's really at. It's really at the forthcoming Junior Don's Christmas party. Someone pointed out to me, apparently, that the results are going to be released on Sunday, sometime next week, when some of us, including me, because I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, agreed to volunteer to help out at the Junior Don's party. Because I've been doing that on and off for a few years, and now my children are too old, but I still help out. But apparently, I'll be in the middle of all that when the results are released. So there you go. Getting distracted by whether or not we can persuade Ayuba Sal or Carl Hudlin to do the limbo.
If you can get Carl Hudlin to do the limbo, that is itself entertainment value. I want video footage.
Yeah, I mean, it's not possible, surely. I mean, we have to know. Like that, sure, that probably fits into the Guinness World Book of Records, I reckon. A man of that height limboing. Then maybe you should say that
the person
Mark.
Who would know. Yeah, the person who would know would be Mark.
Yeah, exactly.
Mark's like only like 1 inch shorter than Carl Hudlin. So there you go.
And he knows it's actually possible to do it.
I think Mark may have the disadvantage of perhaps a few years on Carl Hudlin, but we'll see. I mean, I'm sure that there will be video available of some of the antics that the players get up to at the Junior John's Christmas party, and I look forward to seeing them. But I think we've got our theme tune sorted for this week. I'm going to talk about something a bit different. It's a rant. The rant of the week is back, and it's a claim that the World Cup is somehow the first ever carbon neutral tournament. Which, to put it short, it's bollocks. In June 2021, for example, a FIFA report, and this is FIFA saying it, indicated that the 22 World Cup would produce up to 3.6 million tonnes of carbon dioxide. By comparison, the whole of France releases about 4.2 million tonnes per year. So look at the stadiums. There are eight being used in this tournament. Of those, only one existed before the tournament was awarded to Qatar. And of the remaining seven, six are planned to be permanent. So that's six completely new stadiums in a tiny country. Having a temporary stadium that will disappear completely after the tournament is a novel idea and is less damaging than a permanent empty one, but it's still going to have a huge impact. The organisers have written off the environmental impacts of the new builds by saying that the World Cup usage is only a small part of their expected lives. But even with the planned downscaling, and all six of them will see about half the seats taken out after the tournament finishes, can there really be an economic use for seven large stadia in a country with few fans? The number of people going to matches may well increase after the cup finishes, and I really hope it does. But one of the stadiums is planned to be the permanent home of the Qatari women's national team, a team which barely exists at the moment and won't play more than five or six matches a year. And are they really going to fill a 20,000-seater stadium in a country with such male-dominated issues? The pitches themselves use hundreds of tons of grass seed flown in on air-conditioned planes. The country is short of water, so they had to be grown up to using 50,000 gallons of desalinated seawater for each pitch every day, a process that consumes huge amounts of energy and is very disruptive to the ecosystem. I expect that Qatar, like Russia, South Africa and Brazil before them, are going to be stuck with a load of white elephants. Russia's stadiums were mostly not home to existing club sides, and so many are unused or underused. In Brazil, one of the stadiums is mainly used as a bus parking lot. And in South Africa, the stadium is also underused and a massive drain on a relatively poor economy. You have to go back to Germany for the last time the majority of stadiums used were permanent club grounds, and where the capacities created for the World Cup are used week in and week out still. For all that many of us, including myself, criticised the decision to hand the London Olympic Stadium to West Ham for a tiny rent, at least that part of the Olympic legacy has been delivered. Qatar says that having stadiums close to each other is good because it means fewer travel miles for fans. And they're right about that. But the problem of having a World Cup in such a small country is that there isn't the rest of the infrastructure to cope with huge number of fans. There aren't the hotel beds, for example. So people are flying in from Iran, Saudi Arabia and elsewhere for each match and then flying out again. Hardly a green way of doing things. And whilst there's a modern and very functional metro system in Doha, which serves seven of the eight grounds, we've seen most of the fans, particularly the locals, prefer to use their gas-guzzling 4x4s to get to and from games. And there's no mitigation in place for that. Remember that seven of the eight stadiums are air-conditioned. Qatar has established a turf and tree-growing project, which it claims will absorb CO2. The trouble with that is that this needs to expand massively and be around for hundreds of years in order to do so. All the while, it uses up even more water. The carbon credit scheme that Qatar has created is not fully subscribed and mainly includes projects that will go ahead with or without the World Cup. In short, the claims of carbon neutrality are a con. And as with lots that FIFA do, this is an opportunity missed. Whether it be women's rights, migrant worker rights, LGBT rights, or the environment, world football has the power to make huge changes and lead by example. But money and corruption has won the day. And once again, we're all the poorer for it.
Well done, Alex. Well done, Alex. Totally agree with that. And on the plus side, oh, no, there isn't one. Sorry. And that's I totally agree with you, Alex. I think this just shows what a sham FIFA have become. And it's interesting to be aware that there are conversations being had about countries potentially pulling out of FIFA, which is, I think, a story that will develop and over the rest of the tournament. Because I think you just look at the lack of responsibility and credibility that FIFA have now. And there's a very legitimate argument for an alternative. That's the trouble with, I think, you know, with our football authorities on several different levels are, frequently not fit for purpose. And FIFA have just proven it again. on the environmental things, which of course is the hot topic globally. You know, it's something that we need to be really aware of, we need to think about. And FIFA just seem to be their head literally in the sand without thinking about it. Well said, Alex.
Well said, Alex, that it shouldn't have to just be a hot topic. It should just be a general topic. I mean, I was having a simple conversation with my son earlier today, and he was asking chemistry questions which related to environmental impact of certain things. And said, what kind of similar questions did you have, Dad? And I said, well, A, I didn't do very well in chemistry, so I dropped it quickly. But B, more importantly, those questions just weren't there. And so their generation, the next generation coming through, the next generation of power makers, decision makers, and so on, politically and socially, are asking those questions and should continue to ask those questions. And that doesn't relate just to football, that relates to society overall, or certainly should do. And you would hope if people are talking about potentially leaving FIFA that they have the courage of their convictions, because one thing I've seen with the BBC, not singing them out, because I'm sure other media are just as bad, but they were very big on all the issues relating to Qatar before the World Cup started. Then the World Cup started and they were going, oh my God, isn't it amazing? Follow the game, take the World Cup with you, and all the general reasons that they were trying to promote their coverage, which glossed over everything else that was going on. And the gesture that the German team made, for example, I read various bits of media where British media were effectively laughing at them because they lost the game. Now, yeah, they lost the game, which they shouldn't have done under football context, but that's utterly irrelevant relating to what they chose to do. And they were trying to make as sensible and as powerful a gesture as they could do. The German media, funnily enough, obviously were quite positive about what the football team had done in terms of the gesture, not in terms of the actual performance. But unfortunately, I think now the tournament is underway, certain things are being either brushed under the carpet or just forgotten about quietly, and everyone hopes that everyone will go away and just glorify Mbappe and Giroud and whoever else the wonderful heroes of this World Cup will be for their international teams, which is just frustrating and extremely myopic, if you ask me.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Mark. I mean, I was going to say, Alex, some awesome statistics there. But I also, you know, what disappoints me is that it may not have been a topic of discussion in school, but I was certainly having these conversations 20-odd years ago. So it frustrates me that people who seem to know what they're supposedly know what they're doing have not considered their impact on the environment at this point, because it's a known fact that that humans impact the environment in different ways. So it's just, yeah, again, super frustrating that all of the stuff that Alex has said, it continues to be a factor. And, you know, there is some greenwashing there, you know, plant some trees, etc. Those kind of, it's so frustrating. And this COP is obviously happening, you know, it's been happening now. It's like, it's just maddening. And like you say, that the tournament itself, people might forget, and because they have all the wonders of the World Cup, but I don't think they will. I don't think most fans will. I think people need to realise this is not on.
I think this also has relevance to us as AFC Wimbledon as well. We have built a new stadium. That's now done. We can't think back about what we would have done differently, but you know, it's useful to do that, to inform our future thinking. But we do have the opportunity to continue to make improvements in the way that we run the ground from an environmental perspective. We obviously, being a club, we're using it many times each year. We have the rugby league team, we have the women, although the women I think should be playing there more often than they are, so we get good usage out of it. One of the club mantras has been, and I'm sure that Danny Mac will be asked continually about this, and it's going to be one of his performance goals, I'm sure, is to make sure that when the pitch isn't being used, how many activities do we have in the stadium? But even in a football context, we need to continue to make sure that our environmental goals are met. We've done some of the little things, comparatively little things, which are still worthwhile, like the reusable cup scheme. We need to make sure that we are keeping a very high quality pitch without overusing energy or water. We need to make sure that as much as possible, and I think this is one of the areas where we can improve still, where fans are travelling to and from games in as eco a way as possible. Now, obviously, we're in an urban environment. We don't have huge numbers of people driving to the games, certainly not huge numbers of people who don't absolutely need to drive to games. But I think we can do more to highlight the public transport options, particularly for away fans as well. The number who get on the train and go to Wimbledon and then find themselves a 25-minute walk away from the ground is still quite high. We need to make it easier for fans to get to the ground in a green way. We need to make sure that when they get there, they're reducing their carbon footprint, but still in a way that accords with the way that traditional football happens. I don't think we can quite become a Forest Green Rovers. We can't become a vegan-only ground, much as Adam might like to see that. But there are still many things that we can do to make sure that we aren't overusing energy, we aren't overusing water, but we're still providing the product that people, fans and visitors who come on non-match days would expect from us. And that's got to be something that the club keeps in mind the whole time.
I mean, I want to jump in, even though I know Mark had his finger up, but Mark didn't start talking before I did, so it's his fault. Now, for me on that, there are a couple of things I think that are really important. One of which is, right, we're also the club of the Wombles. And just totally, I'm going totally marketing it. And that is a huge opportunity for us to look at recycling, reusing, upcycling, all of those type of things, and get that kind of mentality, which is the entire environmental agenda that we can do. And I think we should be doing a hell of a lot more on that. The issue around some of the things that we're talking about here is actually time and capacity to plan. And that's the hardest thing, because we can all come out with some brilliant ideas and brilliant thoughts, but knowing the people who work at the club, and they work really hard all the time, it's capacity to get these things in place. I think you'd struggle to find somebody in the club who didn't think that we should be more green and more environmentally friendly and have better ideas. You would struggle to find anyone that. Finding somebody who can sit down and write a proper project plan and a business plan on how we do it and how we achieve it, given the limited resources we have, is our problem. So the call to be really saying, this is our aspiration. Let's find somebody who can do that. Let's find somebody who can actually deliver that, and in a way have some of these more bespoke projects not forming part of the remit of the club, but are like being backed by the club and are supported and approved by the club, but letting people actually do that. That's the kind of bit that we need. I know that's happening now under other projects that I'm aware of that we've looked at, and we've got people that are doing that externally to help the club because the club haven't got the bandwidth to do it, but they're really important things that we'd love to do. Mark, I'll let you jump in.
Just to address that particular point, I was going to move the segue on to something else, but addressing that particular point, it's interesting, as a Don's Trust board candidate, one of the questions we were asked by fans on pro boards, and it's useful to go on to pro boards and still keep using that for the last week or so of the election. One of the questions we were asked by fans was, by Don's Trust, Don's Trust members, what are the immediate priorities are that actually the Don's Trust and the club, two separate entities but intertwined, what are the immediate priorities they have? And the feedback and information that people were really focusing in on, understandably, was relating to finance, it was relating to refinancing the bond repayments, it was relating to general overall financial position of the club in League Two, it was relating to trying to see what other additional staff could be brought in, it was relating to understanding the background to what members of staff are actually in the club. And some other things already appear to be happening. I've seen a number of different adverts already appearing, and having been at the ground for the game yesterday, Danny Macklin was very physically present and intermingling with fans again, observing stuff on the concourse again to make sure Adam gets his cup of tea and his beer at halftime quicker. Certainly introducing himself to myself and to a lot of other volunteers and matchday staff personally, observing what's going on, asking Golden Goal sellers about their methodology and the have and so on and so forth. And as I say, there's a couple of rules that have been advertised that I've seen recently that, as far as I know, didn't exist before. So that, to me, indicates already that he's aware of exactly what's going on. He's aware of where the gaps are, and he's aware of what quick wins can actually be done. And most importantly, the club is able to finance the employment of certain specific backroom staff that either it hasn't done before or hasn't been able to do before, which obviously should help to be able to day-to-day get some of the club activities running better, which then gives an opportunity, and it may be a little bit further down the line than any of us want, to be able to build in some of the ideas on the environmental side that have just been outlined earlier on.
I think it's not impossible for us to all dream about what we can achieve, because I think we can achieve a hell of a lot. And I think we have a hell of a lot of good ideas. And where I think we need to do is move towards a can-do culture rather than I'm not sure we can culture, right? Because I think there are some people out there that really have a passion about a particular way that can deliver things because they happen to be the industry leader in that particular area. And we would be remiss to say we can't do all of those things at the same time, because you've got experts and you've got volunteers that are absolutely passionate, and environment's one of those, right? You could easily get together a strong project group of people who care about the environment and look at what you can put together, as long as you do it in the right, coherent, project managed way. I think there are opportunities that, because that gives people an enthusiasm and a dynamism to make AF Swinburne move to another level and be that really good dynamic things. There will be priorities, that will be staff priorities that we'll be looking at, but I don't think you should be killing other ideas, because I think there is a route to do those. And we can, it's a fan-owned club. You know, there are fans with all these skills, and we should be looking, in my mind, of doing that. You know, and I certainly will still be doing some of the little projects behind the scenes when my term ends at the end of this year.
I'm going to sneak in before Mark again, just because. No, but I totally agree with that. And again, that's why I've talked about sort of the movements around free software and open source, about the way that they leverage their community, and they do that in numerous ways. And so they have a lot of volunteers. And so again, it's just getting people behind that vision and saying, this is how you can get involved. This is how you can volunteer. We would appreciate your expertise in these spaces, and make it open so that people feel they want to give that stuff up. And you know, I think there is some stuff that we can continue to learn from those kind of communities about how they engage the wider fan base, because not all of those people will be donating, not all those people will be Don's Trust members in that sense. But of course, we can take advantage of those people that want to do stuff for the club.
Quite right overall. Plenty of very serious, but very appropriate and sensible chat. Not directly football related, but I wanted to segue into a couple of other things. First of all, just mentioning a couple of things that are coming up at the ground, which obviously feed into the using the ground and working the sweating the asset, as they say, with regards to making more out of the ground on a non-match day. Also relates to activities from DLEG, Don's Local Action Group. Next Saturday after the Grimsby game, they've got the big sleep out too, where some crazy people, and good luck to them all. I understand that the club management staff as well, Toby Skiverton, Johnny Jackson, Rob Tooby as well, are going to be taking part in the Don's Local Action Group with fans and supporters and possibly other players as well. They raised over £40,000 last year. And if anyone is able to sponsor them in any particular way, then that would be fabulous for them to jump onto the Don's Local Action Group.org to be able to see who's on there and sponsor individual people or the whole effort overall. I know they're doing particularly well in certain ways, but everyone else would appreciate that support. I know that there's also a mayoral dinner going on early in December. So again, that's use of the functioning hospitality suites, which is positive. I mentioned the Junior Don's thing going on as well. And of course, the World Cup activity. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get down to the ground on Friday night to watch the England-USA game, but I understand that was a particularly big success. Saw some stuff on social media about that. They've obviously got activities going on for the Wales game on Tuesday night coming, just after this podcast probably released. And then presumably, hopefully, fingers crossed, England are qualifying for whatever the next stage will be in the knockouts. Then I'm sure the club will be putting on those events, and there'll be a short window for anyone to be able to turn around and get that those things organised. But the club I know will be wanting to do those by sponsored evenings. Other beers are available, of course. But let's get the word out about that and be interested to hear from people who've been to those events, either for the Iran game, the first one, or for the US game. Hopefully they were big successes, and that's obviously going to be financially rewarding for the club and illustrating to both fans and also to non-regular Wimbledon supporters exactly what the benefits are of being involved at AFC Wimbledon. And of course, the final thing to add is the Stockport game at the end of January, the £5 all tickets idea, which I don't think we've ever done as a club. Certainly we haven't done it since we've been back at Plough Lane. I think that's a great initiative overall. Fingers crossed we can all get some friends and relations and family and work colleagues and whoever it may be that wouldn't normally come to a game to come down and obviously pack out the ground as much as possible, which obviously makes for a better atmosphere, which means they buy more merchandise, which means they eat more stuff from the food court, which means they'll buy more beer and all around. If we can show those individuals that it's a worthwhile experience being down at the Dons, then they'll come back and fingers crossed we'll turn them into future fans on a more regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to where I'm at with Danny Macklin. I think you have to be like completely locked in a dark room for the last month not to have seen the changes Danny's obviously brought in. I mean, everything you mentioned there has got Danny Macklin's stamp all over it. You know, there's stuff that's been bubbling away in the background. And I think what you'll see is you'll see a release of lots of these kind of ideas all coming to fruition, all being tried. They won't all work, let's be honest, right? Some of them will flop. But the reality of having somebody who is looking at that and going, right, well, this is a stadium that needs to be filled 300 days a year. That's his aim, is a fantastic way of looking at it, going, right, you know, if we have to be filling those executive boxes with community groups because there's no one else, brilliant, because the community are coming in and getting them more involved. If we can sell that silver lounge Monday to Friday, brilliant. That's where his minds are. If we can get more people to feel that this is their club because they connect with it for environmental reasons, because they collect with it, because we're like, I don't know, the number one LGBTQ plus club, because we're the best club for women, because we're the best club for the community, because we're the best club for BAME, because we're the best club for food. All of those things are all things we can aspire to be. They are not mutually exclusive. And in Danny, in my mind, I can see when I speak to some of the guys at the club, the excitement about the opportunities to finally feel free to go and do all of those kind of creative marketing ideas is brilliant, and there's a buzz that hasn't been there for a while, and I think that's really exciting. And we're going to mess up, right? We'll mess up on one or two of these things. We will.
All I was actually going to add to that is all of this is about creating more money for the football club, which ultimately should create more money for the playing budget, which ultimately gives you a better product on the pitch, which actually we cannot lose sight of whatsoever, because fundamentally we know that a lot of people are just interested in what goes on between 7:45 and 9:45 on a Tuesday night, or 3 to 5 on Saturday afternoon. Okay, there's a lot.
The funny thing, Mark, sorry, just I'm going to say one thing because I think I think this is important. I do think that there's this myth that people are all about the Saturday afternoon, the Tuesday evening, or whatever. I honestly think that our younger fans, those who are engaged, they are way, you know, most of them are way more savvy than it just being about a Saturday kickoff. So I do think sometimes there's this thing about just want to come and see a football team win. But actually, I don't think people are that silly that they don't understand that the world connects together in different ways and is connected more. So, yeah, I hear that argument a lot. And I think, actually, I don't think it's just that. You know, yes, there's... Yeah, okay. Like, you know, I work in the game space, which is about entertainment, right? And so there is a moment where you step out to be entertained, but you don't completely disconnect yourself from the world and the environment you live in. So I do hold a little bit of a thing against that and say, actually, I think we're a bit more savvy than that, the Wimbledon fans, and particularly the young fans. And I think we've got to continue to push on that and say, actually, it's, you know, there's a lot more that happens outside of that 90 minutes that's important to everyone.
100%. But equally, there are people. That's what I was trying to say. I wasn't trying to say it's the majority, but there is a group that only focus on that type of thing. And obviously, we have to try as a club to be able to somehow pick up both of those and provide a product, so to speak, that both of those particular organisations are keen on supporting. Anyway, I know we've skipped over a couple of issues we planned to discuss, and we've discussed some other issues which are particularly important, salient, and they always will be. So let's wrap it up for there for the day. Just a quick couple of quick some numbers questions. Where would we be without the some numbers questions? Alex's number, rather, for the week is number 8.
A decent creative midfielder that we're lacking.
Hopefully we're signing one in January.
Hopefully, yes. League games unbeaten. Only 70 more to go to match the record. I don't know. To put me out of my misery.
It's pretty simple, actually, this week. These are all quite simple. 8 was just the number of games you played in November. Simple as that.
Well, that does sort of maybe the cup game against Chesterfield was one game too many. Maybe we're going back to the thing about the players need a rest.
Yeah, I think it's a perfectly fair point. And this full week they've got now to train before Grimsby. I'm sure they'll be grateful for that. Okay, Adam's number is 4.
And supposedly these questions are simple. There was 4 defenders on the pitch.
You always come up with an answer which is much more creative than the actual real truth.
Isn't it normally 5 or 3, Adam? 4 corner flags. That's true.
3 match officials.
2 football coaches. And 1 confidence goalkeeper.
I can't believe we got that far before we mentioned it. We actually sang the 12 Days of Christmas. My wife and I, we did the squad numbers coming back from Aston Villa about 25 years ago. We lost 5-0 the year after we lost 7-1 because we had a breakdown on the M6. But anyway, I digress.
Mental
number breakdown. 4. Okay, it's relating to the games we played in November. That's as simple as it is, really.
4 wins.
Yeah, that's it. 4 wins in November. They're really simple this week. I'm making it really straightforward. Okay. And for Niall, the number is 10.
Games unbeaten.
Correct. Actually, that wasn't what I was thinking of. But had games unbeaten, but it is goals scored in November. That is correct. 10 goals scored in November, 10 games unbeaten until we lost on Saturday. So that was all we had for today. We've been the same old Wombles. We'll see you next week. We, I believe, have a special guest next week, but we will update you on social media when that's confirmed. And stay safe and up the Wombles.